Mr. Benham, Reel 1.
Mr. Benham, what were you doing before the outbreak of the First World War?
I was at school in Newcastle under Lyme.
Can you recall if you noticed any anti-German hostility before the war began?
None before the war began, no. There was a lot of feeling when the war began, and certain roads that had German names had to be changed.
So that...
That was after it began.
Yes. Did you read in the newspapers about atrocities and things?
I can't remember that. I dare say I did. I can't. I know there were supposed to be atrocities. I know there were supposed to be people crucified, but I had no knowledge of it. I wasn't in the army.
Mm-hmm. What did you do when war was declared?
I went back to school in September and carried on at school through the rest of 1914. I made one attempt to enlist about October 1914, but the recruiting sergeant made the rude remark, "Oh, have you brought your nanny with you?"
What did other people that you knew do?
Well, the people I was at school with, and those who were older than I, got into the army at an early stage, and a lot of them were given immediate commissions, although they'd never had any army training other than the school cadet force.
You were at a grammar school?
But I wasn't in there.
Mm-hmm. Were you at a grammar school?
Yes, it was a high school, yes.
In
Newcastle-under-Lyme?
Yes. Did the school itself have its own OTC?
Yes, it did. I was in it, yes, I was. I was in it. I've got a picture of myself somewhere.
Did you all have to join, or was it voluntary?
No, voluntary. Entirely voluntary.
Were there any people who didn't?
Oh, yes, a lot didn't. Mm-hmm. A lot didn't. But some did. My brother went to the same school. He's younger than I am. He did. He joined, and I joined. I think I've got a picture of my brother somewhere. I've got one of myself if I could find it. Well, I was very proud of myself in those days, a little private soldier in the OTC. When I did join... Well, no, I better not say that. When I did join, I found that having been in the OTC jumped me up two drill squads so that I got advanced drill before I would ordinarily have done so because of my training in the OTC.
When war was declared, how long did you think it would last?
Everybody said it'd be over by Christmas 1914, but personally I didn't think so. And I think it was Kitchener who said that it would certainly last 2, if not 3 years. It may have been Kitchener, I think it was.
Can this is a little bit difficult, but can you recall why you thought it might last longer?
I hadn't much idea about it, I was only a boy. All I wanted to do was to get out and fight. I only hoped it'd last long enough for me to do that.
And you thought there was a chance that...
Well, I guess there would be.
Were you still keen to join up in 1916?
I was in a bank by that time. I was working in Barclays Bank in Longton in the Potteries, and I wrote to the general manager at the local head office in Birmingham, and I said that I would like permission to join the army after my 18th birthday at the end of April, unless the bank wished to star my services, but that as I was only the office boy, I didn't think they'd want to. They replied very courteously that in view of my limited bank experience, they didn't think that they would make application to the tribunal for me to be retained in the bank, and they would wish me the best of luck and would keep my job for me until I came back.
So had you heard any stories about the unpleasant aspects of war.
About what?
About the unpleasant aspects of war that might have lessened your keenness.
Keenness?
Yes, to join up.
Well, I was desperately keen, and a whole heap I was aware, but I know that when I enlisted, of course, they had what was that time known as the Derby Group Scheme. Lord Derby was at the War Office, I think I'm right in saying, and he had a scheme. They hadn't got to conscription, well, it came later, they hadn't got to it, but instead of conscription, they let a man join up, and he wore an armband to show that he was in. I think it was a red armband, with a crown on it. And that showed that he was in, and he became known as the Derby Group Scheme, and you waited then until your group was required in relation to the importance of your civilian occupation and the military needs for extra men. Mm-hmm. I didn't join like that. Mm-hmm. I enlisted, and they were highly delighted when they saw me. I said, direct enlistment, please. Oh, they were highly delighted and pushed me in as quick as lightning.
You wanted to join a particular regiment, did
I
you?
Tried to join the Banker's Battalion, which was the 26th Royal Fusiliers, but I found that it had just gone overseas, and in point of fact it was cut to pieces at the Battle of the Somme in June 1916. So instead of the 26th, I went to the 31st Royal Fusiliers, which was stationed in an old amusement park at Portobello, outside Edinburgh. And it was a huge, great dance hall, and rats ran over everything. We slept on three bedboards with two little tiny trestles, all about as high as that from the ground.
About 6 inches.
Yeah, about six inches high off the ground. And we had three blankets. No palliasses, no pillows, nothing. The three blankets and your overcoat. Mm-hmm. And it was terribly, although this was May 1916, it was still very cold and very draughty. Now, turn that thing off a minute, will you? You're up now. Soon after I was posted to Portobello, I was put on guard at Musselburgh, where there was a government haystack bought for forage for horses. It was valued at £1,000, and because of the fear of saboteurs setting it alight, a permanent armed guard was kept on it of a corporal and three men. When I was put on guard for the first time, it was a wet, pitch dark, cold night, and I had the turn from 10 until midnight. So now I must have been on guard about an hour, and we'd paced round this haystack several times in the drenching rain with my ground sheet cape over me, got back to the hut and stood listening, trying to see anything. Then I saw something. I'm sure there's something there. Something moved. Halt! Or I fire! Who goes there? Nothing happened. No answer. And I'm sure I can see something moving again. Yes, there is something moving. Halt or I fire! No answer, so I fired. There was an awful bellow. I'd hit a cow that had strayed into the field accidentally.
Was there a fuss about it?
Well, it broke down the fence. The cow broke down the fence.
Could I go back to the haystack a minute? Was there much of a fuss?
I mean, let that clock go first. Oh, yes.
Was there a fuss because you had shot the cow?
Yes. I was put under arrest, but I was released by the commanding officer at the instigation of my company officer, company commander, who pointed out that after all I was only doing my duty, and that it might easily have been a man that I had shot who might have been intent on setting fire to the haystack. But it was a pouring wet night, the damn thing wouldn't have caught light.
You were based in Scotland with the 31st Battalion.
Mm.
Did you think this was unusual? Weren't there any Scottish regiments?
Oh, you want me to
in Edinburgh?
Well, there were five battalions of Royal Fusiliers in and around Edinburgh at that time, and we had a big recruiting march to because they hadn't got conscription, and they were still wanting men, and we went, I think, about 15 miles round Edinburgh with a band trying to beat up recruits. And I think it was the Scottish Lord Mayor of Edinburgh who complained that the recruiting campaign would have gone better if they had Scottish battalion, and that in any case they ought to have a Scottish battalion in the castle at Edinburgh. And so much pressure was brought on the War Office, the battalion of the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders was transferred to Edinburgh Castle.
You mentioned on your list that you were a sergeant's mess waiter.
As I was under 19, I couldn't be sent to France under an undertaking that the War Office had given to parents until I reached that age. And therefore, after I'd done my basic training of about 14 weeks or something like that, they had to find jobs for me. I became a regimental policeman. I did a stint as a sergeant's mess waiter. I was put on sewerage and latrines. I think I did every job there was of a non-combat in nature. And then in August 1916, I was transferred with a whole lot of other chaps down to the Duke of... the whole battalion, I think it was, the whole 31st Battalion, that's right. We were transferred as a battalion, as a training battalion, to the Duke of York schools at Dover. We were there in an enclosed town with nobody allowed in, very few people allowed out, and fortified. And I could hear the guns firing in France. And we carried on with basic jobs. I forget now what I did when I was there. Odd sort of job. Oh, I was in the cookhouse, in the officer's cookhouse for a long time. And I don't know. And then in October 1916, I was suddenly, to my great joy, put on a draft to go to France, although I was still only 18 and a half. I had my draft leave and said goodbye to my mother, came back, drew me identity discs and had me inoculations, everything ready to go overseas, drew all the extra kit, fell in on parade very early in the morning, and then when the adjutant came on parade, he walked down the lines and obviously could see that several of us weren't likely to be 19 years old. So he went back and gave an order that every man under the age of 19 should take 2 paces forward or 2 paces backward. March. Nobody moved. So then he went down the lines again and picked out people whom he thought were underage and called for their papers. And when it came to my turn, he said, "You're only 18, fall out." And to my horror and sorrow, I was put back from going, and soon after that I put in for a commission, and during the earliest part of 1917 was training as a cadet at Monkton Combe School, Bath.
This business about not going overseas, business about not going overseas because you were under 19, this was because so many families had lost...
So the mothers, before I went in the army I think this was, the mothers had got together and had petitioned the War Office because so many of them had lost sons at the ages of 17 and 18 years of age in the slaughter of 1915. And there had been an undertaking given that no men would be sent out until they were 19. That caught me because I couldn't go out until I was 19, and so I spent the remaining months, as many of them as I could, training to be an officer, and I was commissioned in the Royal Naval Division in June 1917 and went to France in that November.
Did you personally know any families that were virtually wiped out? Well, you mentioned somebody called
Laura. I went to school. No, I didn't. I went to stay with my grandparents in Stafford quite a lot, and there was a family living there near them named Bloor, and they had six sons. And in the early part of that war, five of them were killed on various fronts, to such an extent that there was only one left, and this was after I got into the army. He was very much against his will, brought back from the Italian front and put on home service in order that his mother should have one son to come through the war. That's the only one I know of, but I had a great friend of mine, a boy I went to school with named Llewellyn Owen, who was a midshipman, was a cadet, a naval cadet when the war started at Dartmouth. He was drafted onto a cruiser as a midshipman, an old cruiser out in the Atlantic. And then he was drafted onto another cruiser in the Grand Fleet. And at the Battle of Jutland, this cruiser, the Defence, was blown out of the water and every man killed. He was then 17.